This is Sarah Wright with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear from two very different Back to the Landers. Steve Baird, who came to Mendocino County from Berkeley in 1972, and Tara Sufiana, who moved onto a property on Ore Springs Road near Greenfield in 1971. While some of Baird's friends pursued the lifestyle more zealously than he did, he says he was part of the posse that rolled into town at that time. I asked him why he came.
Well, because of all we had been through after getting tear gassed and on our front porches, and you know, we were very active in the anti-war and the People's Park movements in Berkeley in those days. And by 1971-2, the streets were getting pretty ugly. Berkeley, which we used to think was the most amazing place there could ever be, we'd never want to live anyplace else, was not such a cool place to live at that point. There was still a lot of residual sort of police presence based on all of the things that went down in Berkeley through the late 60s into the 70s. So we basically were looking to do something different. We had no idea what, but we started coming up to Ukiah because my wife at the time, her brother moved here for legal work. He was a lawyer. So we started visiting up here, and they were our age, basically. We spent time with them, and they kept saying, well, why don't you move up here? Why don't you move up here? And so we finally did. And though we had no promise of work here, and nothing to come here to other than, you know, a place to stay and some family here, we just had enough, I think, and we're looking for something different, and we just sort of plunged into this. When we arrived, it was very much in the midst of it was in fairly early stages, but in the midst of the hippies versus the loggers view of the back to the land. It wasn't seen as a positive environmental kind of a thing. It was seen as, particularly by the people who already lived here, it was an invasion, I think, of people that looked pretty unusual. And so it was staged much that way, that it was hippies versus loggers and all that. After a while, without wearing out our relatives, we had enough little bit of work that we rented a place in Redwood Valley, and then met some people who had a bookstore in town. Neil and Susan Bell had a bookstore called Pegasus Books, which was sort of the first version of the community center, really, here. Susan later started the community center in Ukiah. And so their bookstore functioned as a bit of a community center. And we became friends with them. One day they said, we're looking at property. Do you want to look at property? And we said, sure. We had, you know, we didn't have any resources to think realistically about it. But we looked at these two pieces of property. They picked the one they want. And, you know, somehow we really liked this property in Redwood Valley, which is where we still live. And managed to finagle through the family help a little bit of money to get down on it. And so after a year or two of renting in a couple of different places in Redwood Valley, we moved an old mobile home up onto our property and moved up there about 1974 or something like that. It took another almost 20 years to get a house built there. I had built, or Kathy and I had built a cabin. We learned a lot about both building and relationships around that idea. We did have chickens for a time, but we learned how tough that is when they all got wiped out one night. And what it took to protect them from varmints sort of prevented us from getting, you know, more of that. So no, we were not animals were not really, other than ones we were already surrounded with, the deer and the snakes and the rabbits and the on and on and on, the foxes and the, yeah, that was our animal life. Most notably with rattlesnakes. Yeah, that was part of the learning curve. That was sort of homesteading experience for sure. I'm not one of those people who catches them and releases them. I know people who do, and I have nothing but admiration for such people. But when they're like to hang out on my porch, Other things are called for, and so I've had to do that a few times, and those have been one among the times when you sort of look danger in the eye, you know, when you're homesteading in Mendocino County. But you know, rattlesnakes is one way that you can confront, you know, that kind of thing. You know, mountain lion is pretty interesting too, but just had one close encounter with that. That was just not far outside of our back door. We live on 20 acres. It's surrounded by hundreds of acres. And I heard the sound of what sounded like the bleating of a sheep, that once I went over to check it out, just across a little canyon, it turned out to be not two deers fighting, but a mountain lion that had a deer down. And so I backed away from that, but did shoot some, with my ancient video camera, shot some movies of it and sort of studied the situation, and until he finally went off and came back later to get the rest of his deer. But that sort of ended my days of casually hiking around my property without thinking so much about what I was doing. So, yeah, that was interesting. I got a job working at a business called The Corner Store, which was the first organic health food store in Ukiah and perhaps in the county, I'm not sure. It was just, again, a few doors from here on the other direction on Main Street. That was when the co-op was still, before it had a building. So it was like a buyer's group, and they met up and shared the things that they collectively bought. And the corner store, that was where if you wanted to get a bag of organic carrots, or if you wanted raw milk, or if you wanted yogurt, or any of those things, that was the place. So I got asked to start a restaurant inside of it. So Rick Buchholz, who owned it, asked me to open this restaurant. So built sort of a restaurant inside of this natural food store. That went along very well for a while. And that's how I met Sheila, my wife. She had worked in the store early, went away, came back, and then came to work in the kitchen with me. And we've been in the kitchen ever since. I know the San Jose Mercury came to town in about 1975 or 6, and they wanted to interview some loggers and interview some hippies. So they came to the corner store, and I got interviewed amongst other people to give my view of this conflict of communities. And my view was that, can't we all just get along? I mean, that was, I knew there were people, and I knew people on both sides, let's say. I knew, you know, people in the more of the traditional community that I maybe didn't know well, but I respected, and I didn't think that there was anything inherently wrong, nor was everything inherently right with the people more on the long hair side of the divide. I got to see all sides of that too, working in business, working in retail, serving the community. You see a bit of everything. So I think I had a fairly balanced view all in all. Well, the downside, I think, was getting a firsthand experience about how hard it is to survive. You know, I had grown up in town and living in places like, you know, Berkeley, and, you know, it's like you don't have to sweat survival. Not that our lives are in danger here, but you know, we happen to have decided to live on our property in a very limited kind of a trailer that had turned out to have leaks in the roof. And it was a year that had the highest rainfall. We got snowed in twice in that winter, which doesn't happen very often around here. And I haven't seen weather since that compared to the, I believe it was the winter of 73-74, and it was pretty extraordinary. So we struggled to not get washed off the mountain, to be comfortable, to get in and out, to try to have our little garden. That was a face-to-face with, oh, so you really want to live on the land? And it gave me more admiration for the people that were doing it really much more successfully, that were planned better, did more of their own infrastructure, and you know, we did okay, but we were definitely not doing as well as some people were. To a lot of people, it was an awful thing. It was the people who lived here and saw their lifestyle changing with an influx of people who they didn't recognize or understand necessarily right at first. Though I think over time, you know, I've seen that rapprochement of these communities. It's all pretty well merged in the middle. And it's certainly, I have to think that the influx of people here changed the way of life here that was based on agriculture and logging and, you know, timber production and, you know, Masonite and all the mills. And we didn't come here to work in the mills. They were certainly still going strong. But, you know, we sort of carved out, you know, new businesses and you know, worked on our land. And certainly people came here and, people didn't talk that much about coming here to, you know, growing pot and doing all that kind of stuff. But the pot was certainly part of the culture, but cannot compare to how that's affecting the culture here now. It was the beginning of it, indeed. And it was a lot riskier back in those days. There are so many other things that grew out of this influx and ways in which you asked about how the culture here was affected. The formation of the Ukiah Players Theater was something that, you know, affected the whole community, and that grew out of people who emigrated here, certainly, and involved locals as well. But, it's more individual experiences that, you know, that sort of fill up the book.
Tara Sufiana has written a book, mostly about dancing, singing, and seeking through Europe and the Middle East between 1979 and 1991. She can be found in Ukiah at Writer's Read, Sundays in the Park, and First Friday Art Walk. Still dancing, still singing.
I was going to Sonoma State University, and I was invited to come to a yoga retreat with Yogi Bhajan, and a Sufi retreat at the same place on Greenwood Ridge. And I was so camped out up there almost a month for these retreats. The land was so beautiful, so I asked the owner afterwards, do you know any land for sale? He called his realtor, and the realtor said to come and meet him in Ukiah, and he drove me up to my land in this dirt road that wasn't a road yet for almost 4 miles, and got me up on this beautiful ridge. And I said, this is it. He said, wait, there's no water here. There was no house or water. There was just raw land, right? He says, and I had my son with me, who was about 9 or so. So I just bought this land, and I had this red Barracuda convertible because I'd been belly dancing all across the country, different supper clubs and things. My agent was sending me all over the place. And this road wasn't really hardly a road. People weren't living up there when I bought mine. It had just been divided up from a sheep ranch. First, we started out just sleeping on the ground, you know, on mats, thin mats, and then we got a teepee and we did the teepee. And then we were digging the well one day and a fire broke out near the teepee, which was a ways away from the well. Well, I was down in the bottom of the well when my son yelled fire, and we were about 25 or 30 feet. And we took turns. One would be up at the top with there was like a tripod with a bucket. The person at the top lowered the bucket down after the person had been digging with the pick and shovel, you know, well, the shovel to scoop it up, put it in the bucket, and then the person would haul it up, and we took turns. Well, I was down at the bottom picking away the well hole, and so he yells fire, and I come running up, and we go over there, and the teepee wasn't on fire, but all the grass and everything was on fire. Well, you know how that fire started? We figured it out. There was a bottle of water, a gallon of water sitting there, and the sun hit it. And I warned people about leaving water out in glass jars. And well, there was also a can of gasoline, but you can actually, a can of kerosene, I think, or something close. But you can start a fire without that, with just the magnification of the sun. So anyway, I did have my Barracuda convertible back there, and so I dashed out in that, because we had no phone, but there was a phone at the front of the ranch. So I said, well, I got to go, you know, I have to dash. Then when I got to the mailbox, they were already coming in airplanes with this fire retardant stuff, you know. It just, you know, the whole thing was quite an adventure because things were always happening, you know. We never did finish the well, actually. And so I started teaching Kundalini yoga, as I had learned from Yogi Bhajan, great teacher, and belly dancing because, you know, and I did it over at the ranch house out there on the lawn. And then the people came in, a new group from Berkeley bought the Oar Springs. And so I got friendly with them. I could walk down there and sort of help plant fruit trees and things. They became part of, I mean, there was nothing up on my ranch. I mean, there was wonderful. It was animals and birds, and it still is. So I did go, I went once a week on a tour, a teaching yoga and belly dancing. One class was in Willits, and then one in Branscombe. And I mean, one in Laytonville, and I'd spend the night there because then people from Branscombe came and wanted me to teach yoga in Branscombe, and I'd go over there and teach to Mendocino then and teach yoga and belly dancing over there. I had 40 people in my class in Mendocino. So it took me 2 days, you know, to make the rounds. And then I met Mishtu and performed in a show, an Indian dance thing, killing the demon. You know, I was Durga, who slays the demon in the end, and that was big production. She was great. I mean, she was a great teacher. And I'd given up my dance career. You know, I was making good money because to tell you the truth, I was just intoxicated by nature. I was just, I forgot about money, and, you know, I mean, I've got birds who are singing with me when I sing now. You know, after all the nightclubs and all these men chasing me, I became like a monk, you know, solitude. I did a 35-day fast on rainwater, and I wasn't a pot smoker. I know it was fashionable and once in a while at a party, but I got really high on the 35-day fast. I had amazing spiritual experiences, and I became so purified that I could run down the hill and all the way up to the top of another mountain where, you know, like I could just naked, no shoes.
So when you came to Mendocino County first, what were you expecting to find?
I wasn't expecting anything, actually, except silence. I wanted silence, and I wanted to be able to be naked when I wanted to be naked. I kind of really wanted to be alone and be with my son more, but I actually ended up too much fasting and, I mean, too much wanting to be alone, meditating, and wasn't spending enough time with him, actually. I mean, we did. We had a very close spiritual relationship, but we didn't. We were mainly eating raw food. And then he went to work at the co-op. We just started up around the mid-70s, and I wasn't really working. Well, I was making a little money teaching, you know, my yoga and belly dancing, but not a lot. A lot of people paid me with goat cheese. You know, I really liked it in a way, getting to know the different groups because I was teaching dancing, I got to know all the county. I wasn't a belly dancer because that was my intention. I had been a ballet dancer, and then I went to Spain to study flamenco when I was about 21. I came back and there was no work. I went to see an impresario in Los Angeles and there was no work for flamenco dancers. And he said, "Do you do any ballet dancing?" And I said, well, I had been in Morocco working. And also I used my tiger skin bikini for kind of a wild jungle dance I did in Tangier that sort of hit the charts there. And well, they wanted something different than flamenco because they already had that, because Spain's just across the Straits of Gibraltar there, you know. So I didn't have any other costumes, so I used my tiger print bikini. I'd come leaping out over a pot of fire. My life hasn't been exactly like maybe your ordinary sequences. And now I'm really lucky so far. It's pretty silent still up on my land. And that is the most important thing for me, is to have silence. Or I don't mind wind and trees or, you know, the birds, I love them. But I mean, I just am one of the, even when I was working in nightclubs, I had to have a quiet room somewhere, and they usually provided it in a hotel, you know, a nice room.
How do you think the Back to the Land experience changed you and changed your life?
I think it's been wonderful, and yet in a way, you know, when I was back in Europe, I kind of liked a lot of the energy there when I, you know, it was more, a little more sophisticated, more, but for one thing, they pay for the arts. They pay for my writing. I sold more books in Switzerland in English than I sold here, you know, so far. It's nice. It's not just about money. It's nice to know that it's considered something valuable, you know, that the arts are considered something you pay for. So it did change my life because, like I told you, I forgot about making money kind of and got just into this nature. And but then, you know, when I went out, went to Europe to visit, I did make quite a bit of money. So when I came back, I built a new house, a real house. We had built a little octagon and that I lived in, you know, the first few years. It was only 16 by 16, but it was really nice. You know, you could just see all the way to the ocean, you know, forested mountains, and you still can. And so then I built a house, and I got the solar panels up, and I, you know, had electricity, because I'd been reading in the 70s by candlelight and kerosene. And then I didn't want to do the kerosene too much, so I was doing two candles, worked pretty well. And so then I had electricity, and that's what I mean. If you have money, you can do things a little. So, you know, it was really great. And then I had a new well drilled, see, for water. You know, I was just in the beginning. I didn't have anything, and so I just didn't have the money to buy solar. I wasn't set up for any of this stuff yet. You need money. And also, actually, I had so many good experiences, but in some ways I kind of preferred my life where people gave me money for my dancing and singing. I mean, I preferred that part of my life where I could do what I loved to do the most.
Did you ever have a chance to go back to that?
Yeah, I do. I perform every now and then. I performed for this... the gratitude event after the fire. It was really beautiful, they said, what I did. And then this musician wanted to work with me. Well, I've just had a lot of emergencies recently, too. So different weird things happening or end up in the emergency. Anyway, and I think that's one problem with living alone and being alone so much lately is it makes me more sensitive. If I'm out with people, you know, you're not thinking about things like that so much or feeling quite as much, that you're more like connected in the moment, you know. And well, this is part of the moment, the suffering. But I called in the radio station and told them I was going to do an 8-minute meditation and on compassion. And I just feel like, you know, the more people who are sending compassion, and maybe especially when you're doing it all at one time, you know, in a group. But I feel like my singing is needed now because I have healing. A lot of my songs, I think, help. People tell me, like when I'm singing at the brewery sometimes, they say, they really like me when I sing there. You know, I'd go to the open mic. But I don't do it sometimes because I have all these other things. And then I don't go because I want to get home because the road's going to be closed. I mean, or I'm just sort of overwhelmed by what's going on the planet. Especially, you know, also the destruction of the planet. Have you read The Lord of the Rings? When my son and I first moved up to the land, we were both reading The Lord of the Rings. I mean, we each had our own book. And there's that part where things get really heavy and evil is getting so bad, you know. And it looks like, you know, it'll never get better. And then the trees, they helped. The animals, the trees, nature, and as well as the good guys, you know. And I've tried to remember that if you can go through the really bad, bad part, then it'll transform into, you know, truth and love. So it's a hard time to be on the planet, you know, if you care about people and water and air. I don't like to drive much because I'm too sensitive to drive combustion engines lately. I never did like them, but now I just didn't, because there's so many now. You know, it was sort of a quiet little town here. And now every time I come in, it's more and more, and there's all these cars and all these people and these lines and this, you know, it's, but I'm still happy to come just to be with people, you know. I mean, just to do things, and I, you know, like I'll probably go to the art walk tonight, you know, because I'm here anyway, and my road will be open after 7 or 6, 6:30 or so. They open it up, so you go home. So I won't have to take the detour. Yeah, I've been alone a lot, and I feel like because of the accidents, because of the road, because I wanted to go to the writer's read. I'm part of the writer's read, and they insisted that I come this time, but the road was closed. Yeah, so it's good to be with people some. And that is the thing about being alone, as I think you become even more sensitive, which is wonderful because, in a way, when you, the nature, like now, my connection with the animals and the birds again has almost kind of been more like when I was first up here, you know, because I've been forced into this kind of solitude situation, which helps me get a lot other things done, you know, plus some writing. So what I'm going through now is very sort of similar, except I have a Subaru and the dirt road is good. But it's sort of the similar kind of sensitivity to nature when you have no one to talk to.
We'll go out with one of Tara Sufjana's songs, Orange's Lecithin Champagne, from her 2014 album Sing the Earth. She wrote the lyrics while carrying a heavy bag of groceries up the road, and she is the vocalist.
Just wanna live a simple life up in the hills. Gonna need for tripping round our superficial thrills. Walking the dirt road to my home, simple needs all in my pack. I've got oranges and less than.
I want to say that whoever does buy land still and goes back to the nature, I do so hope that they will honor the silence. Because we need spaces in the world where there is silence. That's the hardest thing to find.
We've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Steve Baird and Tara Sufjana. If you'd like to check out our archive with photos and more, just type Promise of Paradise KZYX into your search engine. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and the Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.